We're going to be going over to 1 Samuel. We're going to be spending some time in Sunday school in the book of 1 Samuel. This morning, chapter 17. Going through our lesson series. Oh, it's off again, isn't it? I don't know why you're obsessed with me having this thing on. Appreciate you, brother. But 1 Samuel chapter 17, and I guess we can't talk about David and giants without talking about David and the giants. Oh no, that. I don't think that's me. Ever tell you what? While he's fixing that, while we were over at Flat Rock, we have a KFC that was across the street. And at one particular point, they must have changed the frequency on the radio because people were calling in their orders through the drive-thru, and it was coming over the PA. And it was about the most hilarious thing you've ever heard. I mean, it was a little bit of... It was a little bit of a bummer because it was a good message, but just halfway through, you know, it kind of stunned me how many people order mac and cheese from KFC. But... All right, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 45. If we're going to talk about giants, we got to talk about the giant. Verse 45 said, "Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." You know, we pray and we talk and we discuss about all the struggles we have. We talk about the struggles we have in politics, in our day-to-day lives, and in work. And you know, that's all well and good for us to talk about those things, but we also have to be willing to do something about those things. And I think one of the biggest troubles, and why, church is kind of lopsided this morning, but I think one of the biggest reasons why we struggle with that is because we don't realize that when we go to battle, that battle belongs to the Lord, as David would say. Right? Even in his description as to what was going to happen, he said, "God is going to deliver you into my hand." We cannot sit with a life filled with giants terrified as to how they're going to go. We know that God has a concern in our lives. We know that God is there, He takes care of us, and He is the best one to have on your side regardless of who we're fighting. Christians are usually willing to do small tasks for the Lord, but shy away from larger tasks that appear intimidating or involve too much work or responsibility. Right? If it was down to a matter of mowing the lawn, shoveling the snow, cleaning the bathroom, sanitizing switches, no doubt everyone would raise their hand, "Hey, brother, let me in on that somehow. Let me take something there." But if I were to sit there and say, "Hey, how is Brother Dennis was talking about this morning, how is your testimony at work? Are you willing to put effort into that? What's your soul winning like?" Hey, if you were to ask to, let's say we get someone who's brand new and saved, if I gave you some material for you to teach them on a Sunday morning, I'll call it a discipleship class, would you be willing to say, "Yes, brother, I will do that"? We cannot shy away from the bigger battles. Christianity is not just a hobby. It's not just something that we can flippantly claim to be. If we are Christian, we must put on the armor. We must go to work with that armor on. We must battle. Jeremiah 33, verse 3 says, "Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not." You see, it was God who enabled Samson to kill 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. It was God who enabled Jonathan and his armor bearer to do the giant task of attacking a strong Philistine garrison. It was God who surrounded his prophet Elisha with an invisible army so that he could say in 2 Kings 6:16, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." no matter what the battle is in your life, it's outnumbered. Because you have God on your side. Think of the last time you truly struggled with something. Right now, I'm not talking necessarily about sin or anything like that, but something completely outside of your control, something that's just vexing you. Think of the last time that happened. You may be going through it right now. What you have to understand is as long as you are in the same step and heart with God, that trouble you're having or had had is outnumbered. Because one of two things is going to happen. Either God's going to handle it for you, or he's going to walk through that mess with you. Either way, whatever it is the devil was trying to get at, no matter what's trying to just naturally happen, God is there to take care of it. And it won't have its intended effect. In this lesson, we see David as a shepherd boy who was willing to take on an enemy who literally was a giant. We see point number one here in our lesson, the challenge and the cause. Today's Christians face a myriad of challenges from the world. And instead of confronting these challenges, we frequently ignore them or hope that someone else will take care of it. Oh, you know what? That's really sad, and I'm so smart for knowing that it's going on. That seems kind of sad when you put it that way, doesn't it? Oh, you know what? This is a really rough time. Someone else will go give them the gospel. I tell you what, if maybe we paint up the steeple and we make everything look nice outside, the elect will just come pouring in. That's not the way it works. Right? It's hard to get that to happen. What happens is when you see people in your life who are in need of the gospel, you reach out your hand and you do something about it. I tell you what, you probably will give the gospel for 10, 15 years, never find a single one of God's elect. But you were here for those 10 to 15 years to give that gospel out. Right? Well, you know what? I've got this struggle in my life and I don't know what to do with it. Well, I tell you what, you need to go with all the things that God gave you to hit that challenge. Whether it's a personal illness, whether it's a sin struggle, whether it's struggles in your relationship, whether it's struggles in your finances, what you need to do is stop ignoring it and stand up to it. If you look at all the children of Israel, all the army of Israel there, what were they doing in the face of that giant? They were waiting. You ever try to wait a problem out? How often when you try to wait a problem out, does it get bigger in the interim? Always seems to do that, right? That giant only gets taller. He only gets more weapons. He only gets louder the more you ignore him. Children of Israel are so happy to just sit and watch horrible things happen. Watch them say terrible things about God. They were perfectly content as long as I didn't have to go out there and fight it. Well, folks, there comes a time when we have to step out and we have to fight the giants in our lives. David was willing to take on the challenge. You know, I heard this said before, and I firmly believe it. You know, God does not need talented people. He'll make you talented. God does not need incredibly intelligent people. I'm here to prove that. He can do stuff with just mediocre intelligence. He can do that, right? So, and that's probably giving me a little bit more credit than I deserve. He can do that. Right? I've met people like that. Well, I'm not really all that intelligent. You think God needs your intelligence, he can teach you. You think God needs your common sense, he can give it to you. He doesn't need your wisdom. He's got tons of it. He's going to give you some. You don't need those things. You know what you need? What God needs from his people are willing hearts. Hearts that are willing to do whatever it is he's asked of them to do. Get rid of that sin? Yes, Lord, it's yours. You want me to step out and be a help to this person? Absolutely, Father. I will be that person. Just be with me as I stand up against this problem. Verse 26 of our text, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine? Sorry, and taketh away the reproach from Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy naughtiness of thine heart. for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. You know what bothers me? When a child of God hits some traction in their lives, right? They're ready to go. And they're excited. They're pumped up. Hey, what is it that God wants me to do? All right, I'm going to go. And there's always that one backslidden person. Oh, you're taking it too seriously. You're going too fast. You know what? It's not all that important. You only got to take, sometimes you got to take what that preacher says with just a grain of salt. You really can't be taking things this seriously. I don't know if I've mentioned this before. When I was a kid, I used to play the trombone in the marching band. Wasn't all that great at it. One day I decided, you know, I'm just not going to play this song. And you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. So I stepped away from it. And there was a Christian, somebody who by every definition was saved, according to their claims, somebody who should have known better, took me aside and said, now listen, don't you go talking to the other kids about this because you're just going to cause trouble. Now listen, I do think I've said this before. The song that I refused to play, the song that made me quit the whole deal, was a song I can't even say the name of from here. That's a high school thing, right? I can't even say the name from this pulpit of that song. And they're sitting there telling me, well, don't say too much about it because you're just going to cause trouble. Saying that I was being too high and mighty, goody two-shoes. I was once called the pastor's puppet. I was like, how creative. There's always those people who want to stand up, and every time there's fire, they want to douse it with water. David did not care. Right, his brother here was embarrassed, most likely. Why? Because here's this little kid. Now I don't think he was little. I think David was probably more like right here. But here's this punk kid with his few sheep coming to embarrass the entire family and the entire army of Israel. See, David, he didn't care about all that. He was the first one willing to speak up against the challenge. And then he was willing to act to defeat it. That ought to be our intention, right? You come into church, you hear a good sermon about your sin, you're sitting there, the very first thing you ought to want to do is act to defeat it. I'm going to get this thing out of my life. Maybe you hear a challenge. Hey, there's this problem in my life. You know, I've been thinking about this, and God gave me the answer as to what I'm supposed to do with it. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get up early in the morning, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up. I'm going to forgive this person. I'm going to reach out to so-and-so. I'm going to rebuild that bridge. I'm going to reestablish this relationship in prayer. I'm going to reestablish this conversation between me and the Lord that way. Whatever it is that we're supposed to do, we need to do it. Men older and more experienced than the young shepherd just wanted to sit by and do nothing. See, it's not the age, it's not the experience, it's the willingness of the heart that slays the giants. And how knit it is with the heart of the Lord. David could have said, I'm too young to face this challenge. Or nobody trained me for this. This isn't my job. You ever hear that? Doesn't that frustrate you? Maybe you're working at work, somebody says, this isn't my job. And you end up having to do it. Drives me nuts. I don't get paid enough for this. You know what? When it comes down to the service of the Lord, there's nothing that the Lord could ask me to do that would ever pay back what I owe. That's just the truth. And I tell you what, I'll let him write the story of the rest of my life for it. I really will. Whatever it is you want me to do, Father, I'll go. His very question here wasn't, well, what do we have? What's the plan, guys? His question wasn't, all right, well, do we have a secret weapon? Do we have a sniper somewhere? How do we do this? Where's the guy that can throw the spear a really long ways? No, his question was, what shall be done to the man that could kill this Philistine? He made no excuses. He made plans. This is what we're going to do. You know, any challenge in your life, with very few exceptions, can be handled by just being a good steward of the moment. I've known people with very serious illnesses. And you know what they did? Some of them fought it. Some of them took their hands off and said, you know what? There's nothing I can do to fight it anymore. But you know what? You need to have a plan. Don't sit there and just let things happen to you. You get down on your knees. You get with the Father. You see what He would have you to do. And you fight back. Here's another thing that sometimes we do. We completely ignore the problem out there, and we hide. We're not talking to anybody in the church about it. We're not talking to our spouses about it. There's just this problem hanging out there, and we're never doing anything to address it. The Israelites would have lost with that tactic. They were losing by that tactic. Today, God's people need to survey the home, the church, the workplace, the community, and look for challenges the Lord would have us to defeat. Today, more than ever, we are in need of those who will stand up and fight for Jesus. In his entire career as a basketball player, John Hondo Havlicek of the Boston Celtics was estimated to have an average of running over 6 miles per game. He was often asked how he developed such amazing stamina. The answer was simple but surprising. While growing up in Ohio, Havlicek never owned a bicycle. When his friends would ride, he would run alongside them and try to keep up. This helped him develop the ability to run for long periods of time, and it ultimately helped him later in life. Sometimes what we need most is just stamina. Well, how do I develop stamina in fighting these things in my life? Well, you start off with one. You take what you learn from fighting the first one, you take it to the second one, and you just keep it up. You learn, you adapt, you push harder, you work harder in the challenges that God has put in your life. And after a while, you're going to be like David. There's not going to be a battle you can run across you don't want to throw your hands into. Why? Because you become about the life of doing what God expects. His expectations become your expectations. It also helps in our next point here. David was zealous for the cause. We see verse 28, and Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." And David said, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause?" Now, a lot of Christians, they go from salvation to the grave, doing very precious little. Why? Because a cause was never instilled in their hearts. They were thankful for their salvation. They were thankful for the warmth of their pew. They were thankful for their life and times being able to be in the church, but service never quite fit what they were looking to do. Service is a part of what each and every one of us are supposed to be about. Service ought to be the key ingredient. There is a cause for what we're doing here. That there really is. It is not our job just to make sure that the pews stay down. Those will do it on their own. Well, they look bolted in. They're not going to go anywhere. The purpose of us being here this morning is to grow in Christ. And then the rest of every minute of our days, go into the Great Commission. Go into our own personal growth with the Lord Jesus Christ. There is a cause. There's a cause for you to be as sharp as you need to be. There's a cause for you to be serving as hard as you possibly can. There's purposes for those things, and there's a zeal that comes along with it. Ask you a question. You ever been serving the Lord and it just kind of get to you? I mean, I'm talking like you just kind of get giddy off of it. You're excited. Well, I was over there in the office last Saturday, and I was just kind of going through things. I found a great big book. Has scraps of newspaper in it, articles. It's got pictures in it. Just going through that. That did so much to my heart, going through that, those pictures. It's still back there, by the way, if ever you want to take a look at it. But I just looking at it. All the things that this church has done. All the things, or all the people that have been a part of this. That's exciting, isn't it? That you get to be a part of something much bigger than yourself. And you know what? It becomes you. Right, the being a part of a church, a New Testament Baptist church, not only just becomes who you are, but it envelops you. We ought to be living that life with the sole purpose of the joy that it gives both to the Father, and we can also experience joy ourselves in doing it. You think of how often we see in the New Testament those that serve the Lord smiling. Look back at Baptist history, all the martyrs that were of the real Baptist faith, the things that they said in their dying breath. These were people that had zeal in service. I'll tell you this word, though. If you lose that zeal, if you lose the joy, everything becomes difficult. It does. It doesn't matter. It could be inside the church, outside the church. It could be anything. You lose the zeal for it, it becomes 10 times harder. Oh, what we need is to recapture that zeal of the cause. 2 Kings 10:16, we read, "Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord." Colossians 4:13, "For I bear him record that he hath a great zeal for you." It is thought-provoking to ask ourselves, do we truly have zeal to help further the work of God, or zeal to help the people of God? Can we, or can people, see our zeal for the Lord? I tell you what, I think that would be one of the best testimonies to have, the best thing to ever put on anybody's headstone. This person had a zeal for the Lord. This person loved serving the Lord. It wasn't just, you know, being a Christian was how they decorated their home. Being a Christian was just their personality. It was everything they ever wanted to do. And I pray every day that the Lord would further mold my heart into that image of somebody just so greatly affected by Christ and what was done that it echoes through everything I do. Point number two in our lesson, the courage and the confidence. Courage is a very hard thing to come by. Verse 34, "And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." I love how David almost completely takes himself out of this. He says, yeah, I grabbed him by the beard and I slew him. But look at that verse there, verse 36. "Seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." You know how I killed a lion? It was because God wanted me to kill that lion. You know how I killed the bear? Because God wanted me to kill the bear. Now, they didn't have any reason other than having taken one of my lambs. This guy has really messed up. I'm getting involved. Right? He trusted that God was going to be there in that clutch moment. In that moment where he knew that there would be a battle, there knew there would be a trials, the lion came to memory, the bear came to memory, that giant, he meant nothing. If my God can take these small hands and kill a lion with it and a bear with it, this Goliath, he's going to be chump change for me. Those who have found courage in the companionship of a human friend will understand how much more the presence of God means in times of need. This type of courage was exemplified in the life of the prophet Elisha. Elisha was in Dothan when the Syrian army laid siege to the city in their effort to take him captive. The people of the city and even Elisha's servant were terrified by what they perceived as the impending doom. But one man was not afraid, the man of God who knew and took confidence in God's protection. Now, this is actually a sermon that we're going to have later on today, but there's something that happens to the soul when it is seeing God work. Something happens. You see, once you see, yes, the Lord has saved me. All right, now he's asked me to do this, so I'm going to step out in faith. And everything worked out way better than I thought it possibly could. All right, listen, this is the next step I've got to take. I'm going to do that. See, I didn't even see this being so great. So there's something that happens when the Lord has delivered you and when the Lord has blessed you beyond what you could have possibly thought possible. Author Henry Millman tells in his book History of Christianity about a man named Chrysostom. Chrysostom, whose name means golden mouth, was the greatest preacher 1,600 years ago. He was very popular with people and a brilliant scholar. Chrysostom was bold when it came to condemning sin, and he was called before the emperor whom he had offended. He threatened Chrysostom with exile unless he apologized. And he replied, "You cannot exile me because this world is my father's house." "I will kill you," said the emperor. "No, you cannot, because my life is hid with Christ and God." "I will take away your treasures." "No, you cannot, for my treasure is in heaven and my true heart is there." Folks, there is little that can be done to us on earth that really matters. Oh, in our flesh, we hang on to things. In our flesh, we develop fear. And in our flesh, there's trouble. But I tell you what, if you really take a stand, there's not much that can be taken from you that God can't give back better. What's the worst you can do? Go ahead and kill me. Send me to heaven. I'll never have to deal with this again, right? It's just, and that's just it. You want to take me away from sickness, illness, pain, sin? You want to take me away from my sin? Go for it. We ought not to have any fear from anything that this world could do to us. I think nowadays the strongest thing we could ever really face, at least for now, I know it's going to get worse, is what? People saying nasty stuff about us on the internet. Family members getting mad at you for not being there on a Sunday when you know where you ought to be. See, David's confidence was only there because he had confidence in God's power. Verse 45, then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. What always shocks me in this is, you know, Goliath was teasing David, right? He called him a dog, didn't he? Oh, you said, oh, you little poodle, look at that. This, David meant nothing to Goliath. He was just this little boy. Like, he could have knocked him all around the place. If Goliath would have actually gotten a hold of David, he probably would have had a good old time just mocking and just doing horrible things to him just to scare the Israelites. But in David's mind, he's standing there looking at Goliath just as small. What would you got a giant spear? You got a giant shield? I probably couldn't lift that shield. You got a sword? That's nothing compared to who I've got on my side. There is not a sin that cannot be beaten. There's not a new habit that cannot be formed. There is nothing that God would ask you to do that cannot be done when you do it in the power of the Lord. Philippians 4:13, kind of, to me, I think people take this out of context. So let's take a close look at it. Philippians 4:13, you guys know this one. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. You've probably got that on a coffee cup at home somewhere, right? We've all got that. So often people use that to mean, I can do anything I want. No. I can do all things through Christ. What I'm doing has to be through Christ. You can't go out there sin and say, well, I can do all things. That's not the way that works. In the service of the Lord, I can do all those things. All those things that strengthen me are the things that I can do. David would joyfully have echoed Paul's words in 1 Corinthians 15:57, when he said, but thanks be to God which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Victory is something we have already in things. It ought to be our goal for others to see our faith being honored by God. God's word says, whose faith follow? They cannot see us living by faith. They cannot follow our faith. There's going to be moments in your life when you're called to do things that make no sense to anybody else. I was talking to somebody. I've put my notice in at work. It's an open-ended notice depending on what I need to do with it, right? Because you don't want to be midway through a mortgage. It's not a good thing to do. But I told him, I said, hey, listen, it's coming. We need to get somebody in place. We need to get somebody trained. So I've already got somebody in that I'm training. But he's talking to my regional, and he says, "Well, Matt, you know, there's not a lot of opportunity to grow in a church." I said, well, "All the opportunity I need for a church to grow is in the Lord, right? I don't need any. Well, you know, it's not a very popular thing nowadays. Guess what? It was never a very popular thing. Even back when you'd see that, what was it, 9/11? When 9/11 happened, everybody pouring into churches. They weren't pouring into the right churches." They did not stay. Why? What was it? It was a hat we put on. It was a shield we put on for a half a second just to make ourselves feel good as a country. And then the moment we felt we didn't need it anymore, we dropped it aside. Right? How sad that was. But I tell you what, I hope the gospel was preached at churches where people went in. I hope maybe the Lord saved one or two of his elect during that time. But I would say this, it never was really popular. For the longest time, you see surges and back surges. What is that? It's either good marketing, it's getting people to pray a prayer, convincing them that they're saved, and then doing nothing for them to really grow them. right? We look all the way back to what these people faced. It was hard to be an Israelite. It was hard to be a Christian in the Roman times. It has always been an unpopular thing. So I told him, I'm not worried about being popular. I didn't have it in high school. I'm not going to lose it now. Well, you know, what about money? You're never going to make millions. You're never going to make millions. You're never going to be rich at a church. I said, I'm not really concerned about being rich. I already am. He kind of laughed at me. He goes, I've seen your paychecks. I said, you know what? There's better riches than that. You know what? I go to sleep at night. I don't have to drink to get there. I come home. And my kids are sitting there talking about the Bible verses they learned in school. They're there. They wrap their arms around me. Daddy, I love you. Oh, I'm rich. I really am. I've got a wife that loves and cares for my heart, who sees when I struggle, who sees when I'm hurting, and doesn't ask me too many questions, just is there. Right? This whole newfangled idea where you've got to be vulnerable and a sad little caterpillar in everybody's hands. I'm not a big fan of that. You know, it's not about being vulnerable. I'll be honest with my wife. My wife will be honest with me. And we support each other. I'm rich. I've got a car that works and takes me distances. It's a beautiful thing. You know, are there struggles? Are there issues? Are there troubles in churches? Yes. You know what? Are we going to sit here and find more trouble than just this COVID-19 thing in the future? Absolutely. We will. But you know what? My Father's already prepared for it. So I can step into it without panicking. I kind of chuckled with him thinking about this Sunday school lesson. So you know what? There are going to be giants. There are going to be things that we're going to have to face. But my Lord is a very good shot. He's a perfect planner. There is not a struggle I'm going to be able to find where I'm going that my God's not going to be able to take care of. As David sat and he threatened Goliath and told Goliath exactly what's going on, we too can have that same confidence stepping up to anything that may bother, anything that would get in the way between us and serving God. We're going to put a pin in this. We'll continue the lesson next week, but just consider that.